Welcome to this sports community podcast, the only show in the world dedicated to volunteers of grassroots sports clubs. Now, here are your hosts, Steve Pallas and Joe Novella.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sports Community Podcast with your host, Steve Pallas and Joe Novella. Yes, that's right. We are the only grassroots sports radio show in the world, or at least that's what we think. And we're mighty proud of it as well, aren't we, Steve?
Well, in fairness, Joe, we probably haven't done a lot of research to back up that claim, in all honesty. But if we keep saying it, then I'm sure someone will tell us when we're wrong.
Now, I'm very excited about today's show. Very excited and a little bit of pride as well, because the guest that we have on board today actually is part of the sports community family. And she is also an unbelievable athlete. Her name's Sarah Blank, and we're looking forward to interviewing her, aren't we, mate?
Well, yeah, and it's not because we are very much, Joe, and it's not because she's a three-time world champion or two-time Olympian that's come fourth in two Olympics. It's more about what she's done post her elite career that really excites me and interests me. And she's created a sailing regatta, which she's going to come on the show and tell us about in a couple of minutes, Joe, where the goal is to empower or to introduce sailing to women and girls, not just as the sailors, but as the volunteers, as the coaches, as the officials. And she's created this whole regatta but it's really a club, it's really a development sort of regatta, and all the participants get access to Olympic coaches and Olympic sailors and Olympic officials, and it's just as much about development as it is competing. So really excited to talk to Sarah about that journey and the creation of her event.
Now, this week, mate, we've had a pretty big week at Sports Community. We've produced our live webinars and sent out the video recordings for the live webinars that we've run on the club leadership series, and the response has been nothing short of phenomenal.
Well, it was called Unlocking the Secrets of Successful Clubs, and really that's what we tried to do in that free webinar. And we had 800 people attend. Well, we had 800 people register. We had well over 400 people attend the four webinars. And the feedback has been extraordinary, Joe. And I did a strategic planning session last night where two of the attendees actually came to the webinar, and they were just really, really grateful for putting that information together. So much so that we're going to do an encore performance of that webinar, Joe, and we're just working out where we can fit that into our January holidays, but I think it's going to be somewhere around the 12th and 13th of January that we'll run another two or three free sessions on that unlocking the secrets to successful sports clubs, because it was just that popular. And yeah, you're right. There's a big sense of pride with that. And the other thing with the free webinar, we use that as the launch for our club leadership masterclass series, Joe, which is now available from our sports community website, www.sportscommunity.com.au. And I effectively the free webinar that we did was 19 characteristics of successful clubs, and it was what successful clubs do, but we didn't really have time to go into the how. So We've combined all the different skill sets from sports community to make this masterclass, Joe. And I know you've been frantically pulling it all together and putting it online, but it's an online training course with, 9.5 hours worth of training online?
9.5 hours, that's right. 550 minutes or something like that, if my maths was correct.
Yeah.
So incredible amount of content.
14 modules?
14 modules covering everything from coach and player development through to marketing and comms, which includes your digital communication and your traditional communication methods,
websites,
social media. So, you know, right across the breadth and depth of all the competencies that that grassroots sports clubs need to cover off on. So for anyone who's a volunteer at a grassroots sports club, undertaking this series would give you an extremely strong foundation to be able to perform your role as a volunteer at the club, or as a office bearer or a committee member, or even, you know, as a vice president or in the executive of your club president. So well worth the investment if you're looking to just solidify your skills and give yourself a little bit of a leg up at your club, not only the communication and marketing and coach and player development, but also finances. We cover off on how to run your finances at your club and lots of other topics as well. 14 modules, almost 10 hours of content. It's all video driven, so it's quite easy to follow. And we're very confident that it will provide you with some really good information and helpful hints and tips on how to help your club be successful, which is our mantra and what we're all about.
It is, and it's the way we've put together the training program, and it covers such a diversity. The first module, goal setting and the governance side, so it picks up, you know, the power of planning. It picks up this culture of volunteering and works through how that can be achieved, and the club finance side of it. And I guess that's the area that I take people through. But then Sarah, who's our guest for today, she's going to give a lot of information about the framework for coaching and how to create that environment of coach and player development. And then, Joe, you take people quite extensively through the foundations of communication, websites, what a good club website looks like, social media, Facebook, Twitter, and then we finish off with a little bit, well, not a little bit, quite a significant amount of the foundations to fundraising, and also take people through about 20 different fundraising ideas. So at the end of the course, you're really empowered to go out and do really, and our goal is to do it successfully, easily, the less time as possible, and for you to really enjoy the volunteer side of it. So
yeah, and it's timely to let you, the listeners, know that we really design the series with two really strong, and there's a classic no on radio, which is to have your phone go off.
It's our most popular listener, Joe. Your mum just ring up to say, "Speak more clearly, son."
Speak more clearly, yeah. We really designed the masterclass series with two objectives in mind, and that was to make sure that the content is targeted towards helping clubs reduce their volunteer workload, and secondly, targeted towards helping clubs achieve their goals. So maybe we can talk about that for a little bit, Steve, in that often when we go out to clubs and we talk to them and they've asked us to help them make their club better, they don't actually know what that means. They haven't sat down and gone through a strategic planning process to identify what exactly does make our club better mean. So, you know, this masterclass series is designed to help you find out what that means and help you achieve those objectives that you set yourself. Because, you know, having an objective at a club is not that good either if you can't measure it. I've heard you say many, many times when you've been out talking to clubs, and we were out not too long ago at Mornington Football Club, and I think one of the points that come up when we were talking about objectives is we want our club to be fun. Well, what exactly does fun mean? And that's the kind of... And how do we measure fun? And that's the kind of thinking that we take you through on this masterclass series. So, you know, it's a real paradigm shift for a lot of people, because it gets them thinking about goals and objectives and how to reduce volunteer workload and how to get their websites to actually do most of the work for them. And this you know, blows people's minds. And I had, what do you mean, get the website to do most of our work? Well, websites can sell tickets for you to fundraisers. They can recruit. They can recruit. They can communicate. They can publicise events. There's an amazing array of functionality that you can get out of your website, which would take those particular tasks away from maybe 5 or 6 volunteers. So, you know, this is why we feel that this masterclass series is very important.
Yeah, look, it's something we're very proud of, and so for the up until the 18th of December, Joe, we're offering it for sale off our website, www.sportscommunity.com.au. Just click on the Club Leadership Masterclass tab on the homepage, and then it'll take you through to all the information about the program. And for the up until Christmas, but officially the 18th of December, we're going to be selling it normally for $199, including GST, but because it's the launch period, we're going to sell it for $149, including GST. So we think that that's tremendously good value for money, but on the more importantly, we think it's going to be really empowering as for volunteers to if they invest a little bit of time in the program, it will save them potentially hundreds of hours and make your journey so much easier in being a volunteer. But so check it out. And again, we apologize. We don't need it. Selling is not what we're about. We're about creating tools and resources for volunteers. So if it sounds like a sell, we apologize. But check out the leadership at www.sportscommunity.com.au. Click on the Club Leadership tab and go through. As we've launched the leadership program in the last couple of weeks, Joe, and the feedback's been so positive for that style of learning that we're going to conduct our own strategic planning session next week to prepare for 2016, and not wanting to preempt the what's going to come out of that strategic planning process, Joe, because the opinions of all the sports community staff are vitally important.
As long as they agree with yours.
Pretty much. But a couple of things that we will do, Joe, and I'm really excited about this, is we will create a masterclass series for fundraising and a masterclass series for communication and social media, and really excited to go in depth into those topics, and together they will create a great learning resource for volunteers to really take their club from wherever they are to wherever they want to be. So really, really excited about
so,
that.
So when are we getting some information out to the public on those dates? Have we got ideas on those dates? Have we got a reservation process yet? Because, you know, the last one went very quickly.
Next week's show we'll announce the reservation, the dates. As I said, we're just trying to lock it all in for early 2016. But we'll announce those dates before Christmas, Joe. And then people can register for the free webinars that give the information and know when the masterclass series are coming out, because they've been so well received that people have been asking for them. So that's really exciting.
That's very exciting news. And speaking of exciting, we are very excited to have Sarah Blank with us on the show, and she'll be with us just after a few sponsors' messages for a sports community. So stick with us, Sarah Blank, after the break.
Is your club struggling to attract sponsors? Do your club sponsors drop off after just a year or two? Winning sponsors for your club can be a headache, but it doesn't need to be. With a few simple changes, gaining and retaining sponsors can be made easy and can increase in value year on year. Our ebook, Sports Community's Guide to Sponsorship for Sports Clubs, has the answers. For a special new release price of only $19.95 plus GST, you can discover the most effective way to gain and retain sponsors at your club. To order your copy today, simply visit www.sportscommunity.com.au www.sydneyfootball.com/shop.
All right. As promised at the top of the show, we are now joined with Sarah Blank, who we liked in our office to call Sporting Royalty, because Sarah, you're a three-time world champion, two-time Olympian. Welcome to Sports Community Podcast.
Thank you very much, Steve.
Now, we've had the honour and pleasure of you helping Sports Community along with our journey, but I don't think I've ever really said this to you, but we've really been in awe about what you have done at the end of your career, and we'll talk about your sailing career and the world titles and the Olympics a little bit later in the show. But this weekend, you've just held a regatta for women and girls to get involved in sailing. Just tell us about the background, why you did that, and how it all worked.
Yeah, absolutely. We've had an awesome weekend, actually, just still recovering. at Western Port Yacht Club on the Mornington Peninsula, we had a regatta for women and girls in sailing, and it was an event it wasn't just for the sailors, it was for all women in the sport to participate on the water, to be on the race team or as a coach. And I can go into more detail about, you know, all of the positions, I guess.
Yeah, but, please do. Yeah.
Sorry?
Yeah, please do take us through, because it was definitely multifaceted, wasn't it? It wasn't just for the sailors, but the volunteers, the officials, and those sorts of roles as well.
100%, yeah. So it was take a step back. It was evolved, a mother and a daughter from Western Port Yacht Club came to me probably 18 months ago. This is the second year we've had the event. Came to me about 18 months ago wanting to promote the female Olympians that we have in our sport. Male Olympians have great opportunity after the games to go on to America's Cup sailing, or there's various sort of big events that they can actually make a career and sailing be a profession for them. The opportunities, I guess, for women at the moment aren't as sort of available. There's not as many positions. There's a one boat for women to sail around the world in the Volvo Ocean Race, but other than that, the opportunities aren't as great. So
for the sailing novice that I am, is strength a key component of sailing or not? You know, we've just seen Michelle Payne in the last week or so win the Melbourne Cup and make a comment that sport's not all about strength. Is sailing, do men have an advantage because of just the natural strength or that's not really?
Yeah, look, that's a good question. There's so many, for the sailing novices, there's so many kinds of boats. And there is, of course, in sport, there's an element of strength to any sport you do. So there is an element of strength within sailing. However, sailing is a very tactical and strategic sport. To get around the grace course, you're sort of always challenged by the conditions and also by the number of boats in the fleet, and you're strategically placing yourself, I guess like around a basketball court. You place yourself around the players or the ball, and the sailing is incredibly strategic and tactical like that. So there's a lot of sort of brain and mental power and strength that goes into it. So there is a physical strength, but I would say probably 70% of the sailing is done managing yourself around other boats and around other sailors. So there are boats that involve some strength in this, but it doesn't mean that women can't do those jobs either. But then, you know, so every boat's different. But it just tends to be at the moment there's just that's the career path that the guys after the games can take.
Yep.
So I guess the event came about because a lady by the name of Peter and her daughter Pip, who is campaigning to go to an Olympic Games, sort of wanted females to be a bit more well known and recognised. You know, mm-hmm. she said, if she asked someone in the sailing world, oh, you know, Sarah Blank has won 3 worlds, they wouldn't know who Sarah Blank was. So she thought, well, she wants these females recognised. So she came to me to discuss about, you know, women in sport and or women in sailing, and we sort of evolved the discussion to come up with how we could make this event happen, where women within the sport had the opportunity to learn from Olympians and learn from other experienced, and not just Olympians, for example, female race officers who have a lot of experience, who can share their experiences with people who are other women who are wanting to learn. So I guess they came to me, and then the conversation, Peter and Pips, was about promoting the Olympian side of things and getting us females, I guess, some recognition that she wanted to see us happen. And for me, I was more than happy to come on board, and because my belief is about participation and getting the broader, more women participating in all facets of the sport, that I guess my ultimate goal then is that, you know, those who would like to go right up the pathway to the elite level have that opportunity. But I really am passionate about having the women and girls just enjoy their sport on the weekend. And if we can provide that opportunity to become more skilled at the sport, they can take those skills back to their clubs and enjoy the summer of sailing. So that's why we had the regatta this weekend. It's always going to be the weekend after Cup Day, because that's the start of our sailing season. And the women can and girls can sort of learn some new skills, or as some said, they were blowing off the cobwebs from the winter, and take some skills back to their own clubs.
I took my two very young daughters down to watch, and they were fascinated by the boats. But I guess I was really interested to see how the participants engaged, and a lot of the participants that I was watching were very much entry level or novice sailors, and it's such a rare opportunity that novice sports people get the opportunity to engage and learn from the absolute experts in that sport, like you were able to create with sailing. Was it hard to get the support of the other Olympians that you got involved in the event?
I'd have to say I think that's a really good question, because it's sometimes when you're at that high performance level and you are an elite athlete, you can live in a bit of a bubble of that elite world, I guess, and of high performing, and sometimes can forget, not everyone, you know, some can forget where you've come from, I guess. Once I was clear I've always communicated with the coaches about what the intention is and what it's about. I think last year was probably the harder year to get that understanding, because it was the first year that it happened. But now that we've done our second event, I think they get it. You know, so we're sort of getting some momentum and understanding that the value for us as coaches who have come and as elite athletes, to give back and see, and you know, we had our average age of the women competing were about 40. You know, we had the young ones that sort of 12-year-olds, yeah. And then we had women up to the age of, I think it was about early 60s.
Yeah.
The gratitude and the thanks and just the overwhelming, they appreciate the support. You know, when you give back to to people and to sport. Yeah, the coaches now value and understand what it's about and see how important it is for these women to have the opportunity to, you know, learn some of the skills that we probably take for granted, that we just do because we've done for experience. Yep. And now they've had the opportunity to learn from sort of, you know, women who have had some you know, more experience and more opportunity with their sailing. So
did you get many women that came back for the second time?
Yes, we have. I haven't done the percentages yet. Math's not my top end, but we have had quite a high return rate. And for the ones that said that they couldn't come, a lot of them actually, you know, sent apologies saying they couldn't come. They were either Year 12 exams, Year 12 exams, or the lady that won it last year, she was up from Northern New South Wales. She was studying to be a midwife, so she had her exams as well. And so they'll let us know that they weren't coming, but they'll be back another year. So and that's another thing, I guess, there's with the event, it's, you know, I guess it was created by women and Pip, myself and Peter, and we've thought through, the event's not about winning. We have coaching in the morning, and where the sailors can have one-on-one coaching with the coaches, and then we have coach racing, which is, I guess it's like sailing. Normally you can't have access to a coach at elite level. Like tennis, the coach sits on the sideline.
Yep.
And you can't communicate with your coach. So in this event, the coaches are actually on the race course and coaching the sailors through a race. So one of the most exciting things over the weekend was on Sunday afternoon, our novice girls, who some of the had a fear of water, you know, had never ever got around out on the water sort of more than a couple of sort of out more than 50 metres, for example. They were coached to actually finish a race, and everyone was just cheering, and it was so exciting and such a good achievement that they can then know that they can do this, and that they can turn up to on a Saturday afternoon at their own club throughout the summer and hopefully, you know, remember the skills and get around the improve and get around the race course you know, over the season. So it's the event's not about winning, it's about improving and learning. And so I actually developed, of course, there's you can sort of win trophies within your division, but there's two main trophies of the event, and they actually are based on, we've got some regatta values, which were values which I guess created of what I believe in.
So what were those values, Sarah?
So we have desire, yep. We have learning, we have persistence, enthusiasm, and gosh, I'm trying to. Yeah, you've got me off the top of my head.
No, that's all right.
So we've got those four. I think there's five actually, but we've got the values. Which what we do is we ask the coach. Well, what I do is ask the coaches over the weekend to. Oh, and persistence. There you go. It came to me.
Yeah.
Persistence. We ask the coaches to look at their sailors over the course of the weekend, and, you know, sailors that show that a real keen interest in the learning, and just to, you know, that persistence to keep having a go, and or if it's a desire to learn, all of these things, just the values or the qualities that they're showing. And I asked them to give me their nomination for one of the sailors. And then at the end, so we have a open award, and then which is the Sarah Blank Perpetual Trophy. And then we have an award called the Sarah the Sailor Award, which was, that's what I was called when I was a younger sailor. And so that's the under 18 award. And so the coaches nominate that to me, and then I make a decision on, you know, who the final overall winners of those trophies are. So they haven't necessarily won the racing and the regatta as such, but they've sort of shown what it's all about, what the event's about. So which is really, they're the really valued trophies, we've thought about it. They're trophies made by a local artist down in Jos Law, down in Portsea.
Oh, wow.
So she kindly donated those trophies. So they're beautiful works of art, which they get their names on. They've got beautiful shells from the Mornington Peninsula on them. So, you know, it's a well-thought-out event with all the things that that we like, really, and that I like, that I'm interested in.
Well, I mean, it's a real credit to you, because being at the event and watching it, and really where I was watching it was, I guess, the angle I was coming at it from when I was watching it, are these women and girls likely to take those skills back to their club, whatever it is, and continue to engage the sport and to be a really active part of their club? And there's no doubt what you created was a really safe environment where people could ask questions and learn and develop really quickly over just a couple of days. Although I was only there for a couple of hours trying to supervise two young girls near the seaside, you could see the learning going on and just that quest for information, which I thought was a phenomenal and a real credit to you. So congratulations on that.
Thank you very much. Thanks.
And so some of the learnings are, and I guess there's a real focus now on, even right at the top levels of government and now at the top levels of Australian sport, on getting women and girls and females right, you know, actively involved in sport. So some of the key learnings for the clubs and volunteers out there that want to start to engage this group of the Australian community in sport, what are some of those learnings out of the events for the last 2 years would you put into that?
I think I'm not sure if I sound a little bit off. I think, as soon as you said that, Steve, my first thing that came to my mind was to be genuine. I think it's not, you know, I think to show that you are genuine about wanting to improve female participation, and it's not just a sort of short-term quick fix. I think it does need a well-thought-out process, and I definitely believe, for example, what we've set up with the Sarah Blank Regatta, we've made sure that we've thought about what the women really want, you know, and it's about the learning, and it's about, just as you said, you mentioned a safe environment, just having that opportunity to give some things. And actually, one of the comments to us was, it was a good opportunity to network.
Yes.
And it was also a good opportunity in a non-competitive environment. It was relaxed. Sometimes it can get a bit, the tension can be a bit different at sailing events, for example, when it's more mixed gender, which, I mean, there's 100%, I mean, a place for that, because that's, I mean, I love, the, you know, competition. But it was just an opportunity to learn, to then take it back to their club and walk away with some confidence. So in terms of what, you know, back to the question, I think to have a genuine will to want to improve female participation at your club. And so it really can start with small. It doesn't have to be big, but start small, improve, and get the feedback. And I think not just focus actually on the players or the participants or you know, the athletes, but focus on getting more women, you know, if it's cricket, getting more women out on the field as umpires and giving them the opportunity to genuinely learn. And I really think that one of the reasons ours is working is because there are the Olympians and also other women of incredible experience from our sport giving back to women who are new to the sport and showing that we've all started, you know, at that foundation level of sport. And for myself personally, that's where I have returned to, and that's where I'll be staying, you know. So to be genuine about that, and that's what I believe in. And if you come across from your club that you're genuine about participation and improving that foundation level of sport for women or for females, then, yeah, I think that's probably the key. And from then you can sort of make sure you stick true to that and grow from there.
Well, I think you really picking up all the facets of running your club. I mean, from our perspective, there's no reason, no good reason at all why committees of any sport at any club, regardless of what gender is playing shouldn't be 50-50 men and women on the committee of the club, you know, and as your event picks up, you know, there's the participants, the sailing side of it, but then there's the officials, the volunteers, the regatta coordinators, and those sorts of things. So,
yeah.
Fantastic to you. But I want to take you back a little bit to the time of Sarah the sailor. When you were a little bitty junior, just being introduced to the sport, did you always wanted to go to the Olympics, or how did that come about?
No, not really. I was a multi-sport, did everything kind of girl. Like swimming, basketball, netball, water skiing, all of that. And we had a beach house down at Blairgowrie, which unfortunately we don't have now. But you know, we next door neighbours were just going down to the yacht club, and I was just hanging out with some friends, got into sailing that way, quite enjoyed it. Well, I enjoyed it a lot, just loved being on the water, and I still do. Just being on the water, it's a very calming place to be, and I had no real ambition. I just enjoyed the sport and was having fun, and I did have a turning point, I guess, where I knew that, gee, if I actually did concentrate, I could actually win some races. So I have a very a moment when I was out at Blairgowrie. We were sort of, there was no wind. All the kids were sort of sailing, looking at the bottom of the sea, looking for the fish and all of that jazz. And I remember thinking, gee, if I just concentrate more than these other kids, I might actually pass them. And I do have quite a defining moment of a memory of thinking, if I just concentrate. And so I concentrated, put my mind to it, and I ended up winning that race. And I was probably about the age of 14 then.
Wow.
And that was quite a turning point for me, that I thought, hang on, that's quite a good feeling. And not that that was my Olympic turning point, but it was a turning point in that, oh, I quite like this competition. So, I guess it wasn't till I was... I would have to say I was probably even, I think I was probably even 17 or 18 before the Olympics really came into my mind, to tell you the truth. I loved watching the Olympics and loved sport, but I just enjoyed participating in sport. So, yeah, it wasn't until I was, I actually had won my first Worlds. I won my first Worlds at the age of 18 when I was first year university.
Wow.
I was studying full time, and after those Worlds, I had some interest, I guess, from all of a sudden there was some interest about me from Yachting Australia and from the Institute of Sport. So from there, that's really where, I guess, quite quickly a pathway towards high performance was put in front of me, and I took charge of that. So.
Wow. Yeah. So from the Junior Worlds through to the Olympics, two Olympics, finished fourth at both Olympics. I know you may have a slightly different opinion, but for us mere mortals, that's an extraordinary effort.
Yeah. Look, I'm sure that I'll be proud to tell my daughters one day and talk to them about it. I won't deny it still hurts. Coming forth is pretty difficult, and yes, absolutely wonderful achievement. But I had two very different experiences. One where I guess deep down I thought I had the ability to win, which was in Athens. However, I guess, you know, there was never that outside talk from anyone else, and maybe I needed that reassurance. Anyway, I was in Athens, and I was actually in a gold medal position. Managed to sail my way back down to fourth in the last 2 days. And then, so that was okay. But then no one expected me to be in that position. I probably thought I had the ability, but no one else expected that of me. So it was sort of all, you know, I finished the top place in our sailing team. So everyone thought I'd done really well. For me, I was still a bit disappointed, but that's okay. And then, look, obviously Beijing, I went into Beijing thinking I had I just thought, of course, I was going to come away with the medal. I was ranked number two in the world behind the American girl, Anna Tunnicliffe. So I'd been ranked number two for a while, and so really walked in thinking, absolutely, if I didn't question it, I was not going to come away with a medal. And look, honestly, halfway through the regatta, my coach said to me, Sarah, you got to start taking a few more risks and put the foot down or you're going to miss out. And I'm not exactly sure what that was, but I just went into the event a bit too slowly, and he was right. I left my run too late. And I finished fourth. So two very different experiences. But look, can't complain. You know, I've had amazing opportunities, and I know, I don't doubt that that I had the ability to, you know, I had the ability. It was just, as a lot of sport is, it's about what's happening mentally as well, and I made some decisions that weren't the right decisions for that event. So that's what unfolded.
Well, from our perspective, congratulations on three world champions, two Olympics, finishing fourth. It's stuff that we dream of, but I certainly understand and can hear and have heard when you've spoken about it a couple of times that the disappointment still lingers after all those years. Just one last couple of questions before we let you go back to motherhood and the thousands of other things that you're trying to juggle on your plate. How have you found retirement, being that elite athlete, you know, ranked number two in the world, to all of a sudden retiring?
Look, I'd say athlete transition is quite a challenge. It's been interesting. I've had a couple of goes at it, really. I've sort of went into coaching and realised I enjoyed coaching. But at the time, this was after Beijing, so in 2009, I sort of was, at the time, I was the only female coach around, and actually found it quite a struggle. So I enjoyed coaching, so I went and did a dip ed, and knew that I wanted to be involved in sport, and decided that I'd use sort of the education side and my sporting experience to contribute to sport within the administration side. So I've had a couple of goes, and I feel like now I'm finding that place that so I'm back in coaching because I enjoy, as I was saying before, I really enjoy this foundation participation level of sport.
Yep.
And so it's really important for me to be on the water as a coach, so I keep connected with what's happening. But also, you know, I'm working, supporting sports associations from my experience. Hopefully I can sort of help them. But it hasn't been easy, I'd have to say, but I'm finding my feet. It's taking a long time. But obviously, you know, going into motherhood, I thought I was busy as an athlete. I'm incredibly busy now as a mother, and two young girls, and obviously that's a new challenge in itself, and that's keeping me busy, and also they're keeping me inspired to keep being a really positive role model for them. And that's probably one of the biggest changes now, is that having two young girls, I've chosen to they've really helped with this transition to be a positive, active, healthy female for the girls. So that's sort of, they've been a huge change in assisting with moving on to life after sport.
Well, I think you're just living those values that you talk about so much in your regatta. Now, if someone wants to get a little bit of information about the regatta, you've got a Facebook page there. How can they find that?
Yeah, we've got
that?
A Facebook page. It's Sarah Blank Perpetual Trophy. And we've also got a regatta website, which is just sbpt.com.au.
And you've also got another little project on the side called Swag.
Yes, I do, Steve. I'm just incredibly passionate about women and girls in sport. So at the moment I've got a little project which it's just idling along at the moment, but I intend it to grow. It's called the Sports Women and Girls Project, or the SWAG Project, and it's just going to be more and more information, for example, for athletes on assisting them with transitioning, about, you know, what we've just spoken about, and about women and girls, like nutrition, a lot like what the fitness industry does for supporting women in fitness, but more focused on sports. So, you know, let's say if you're in a, you're a novice in triathlon, but actually assisting with some nutrition and advice and support for women and girls in sport.
Yeah, fantastic.
So that's theswagproject.com.
So it's theswagproject.com.
Yes.
Brilliant. Well, Sarah, unlike so many people that do talk about creating opportunities and talk about this and talk about that, you actually go out and create these wonderful opportunities for women. And it's fair to say that every time you come into our office, which is pretty much weekly, you inspire us. So on behalf of Joe and Pam and I, thank you very much and thank you for sharing your story with us today.
Thanks very much, Steve, and the sports community team. Very much appreciated.
Thanks for joining us on today's podcast. Make sure you visit our website at www.sportscommunity.com.au to take advantage of our free resources to help your club be successful. And while you're there, subscribe to our newsletter to keep up to date with all the latest and greatest in grassroots sports. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and be sure to subscribe to our podcasts on your podcasting service, iTunes, Stitcher, or whichever you may use. We would also love to welcome you onto one of our weekly webinars, the schedule of which you can find on our website. And if you're looking for a unique gift, why not give the gift of knowledge by visiting our shop and purchasing one of our training products for someone at your club. Once again, thanks for being part of today's show. I'm Joe Novella.
And I'm Steve Pallas. Thank you for making us part of your sports community.